Welcome to Parents' Perspective. The sad face of the baby monkey still haunts us from our old psychology textbooks. It was part of an early experiment by a fellow named Harry Harlow, designed to discover the importance of early mothering. Some of the monkeys were caged with their own mothers, while others had a variety of substitutes. Most dramatically, the baby monkeys clung to inanimate cloth dummies whenever startled or frightened, even though wire dummies dispensed their nourishment. Those with only wire dummies had nothing to cling to, so were overcome by fear and loneliness. But as they grew up, it became clear that all monkeys raised with inanimate mother substitutes were in trouble. They sat contorted for hours on end, they mutilated themselves, or they shrieked at passers-by. They were the first scientifically engineered results of the lack of mothering. From these heart-rending findings, the scientific community, the medical community, and the parents of the country were jolted into acute awareness of what every good parent instinctively knows. Parenting matters. And early affection, the give and take between parent and infant, is vital to a child's development. From a parent's perspective, what else do we need to know about this important early interaction? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is a special expert in this area. Deborah Blum is a Pulitzer Prize-winning science writer. She has been a journalism professor at the University of Wisconsin since 1997 and is the mother of two sons. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Deborah.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I'm going to start asking you a question about your book, Love at Goon Park. In this biography of Harry Harlow, the scientist, you note that in the early 20th century, psychologists considered showing affection unnecessary in parenting. What did they prescribe?
Isn't that incredible now from this perspective?
Yeah.
But basically, they argued that your child should be independent almost from the moment of the first breath, and that you would destroy their moral fiber and uprightness if you touched them. So they actually advocated no more than the occasional pat on the head in terms of affectionate touch. And there's a great line from one of the early child development specialists named John Watson, who wrote a best-selling book on childcare. And he says, there are serious rocks ahead for the overkissed child. And
oh
by overkiss, the still, I mean, it's funny now, but you can imagine the effect.
Oh, my goodness.
He meant once a year. He actually recommended that you kiss your child no more than once a year. And his argument was that maternal affection in particular would break down the sort of inner independence of the child. So they advocated being standoffish. They advocated pushing your child away. They were against comfort. They recommended letting a child cry. There was a child care book written by a pediatrician then in the 30s in which the doctor said, I'm seeing all these mothers who are afraid to pick up their children. They're afraid they will ruin them. I mean, this was amazingly widespread and powerful stuff.
Now, how did Harlow prove them wrong? This seems like such a no-brainer. Of course he was wrong, but
it does.
But I guess the idea was you needed to prove something.
You did, because psychology of that time, and the other piece of that puzzle, is that psychology of that time argued that there was no real love between mother and child. In fact, psychologists didn't even use the word love. And I quote this in the book, there was a famous argument between Harry and one of the other psychologists in which the psychologist said to him, why do you keep saying love when we all know the relationship between mother and child is proximity? And Harry would say love, the other guy would say proximity, love, proximity, and finally Harry completely lost his temper and said, well, maybe all you've ever known is proximity, but thank God I've known more. And so if you go to that cloth mother experiment, you look at it from now and you say, well, huh? Your children need to be touched. Hugging is important. Cuddling matters. Doesn't everyone know that? But that little experiment, the baby monkey with the cloth mother, was a big slap in the face to mainstream psychology. And he knew it when he did it. And he was trying to argue only one small point with the first experiments, and that was, yes, touch matters. That's it. And so he compared a wire mother and a cloth mother. And the first experiments only showed that the babies who could cuddle turned out more normal and more secure, even if the mother, they weren't fed by cloth mother. One of the other arguments had been, well, okay, the mother is physically close to the baby and she feeds him there's the relationship. And so he was targeting that specifically. And it was almost like a military campaign for him. He used to argue that he was waiting for science to catch up with common sense. And to him, this was shoving psychology in the direction of common sense. Pay attention. Mothering matters. They count. They do things that babies need. And that was that first experiment.
As many non-scientists would interject, what does this mean for us as parents?
Well, you know, the simple answer is it means hug your kid.
We like that one.
So, and I've actually been, I wouldn't say that I've been sort of hanging over my children since I wrote the book, but it's made me think about the ways that I interact with my child, and I do think about the importance of physical affection. I think that's part of it. I think you need to be demonstrative. I think all of these studies, not just Harlow, but the sort of studies that follow, the attachment theory kind of work by people like John Bowlby, say that children need constant reassurance. You need to pay attention. You need to be there. And Harlow's work fundamentally says, be there. Pay attention. Notice your child. It doesn't say be there every minute. It says when you're there, this is a person who needs you to be engaged. And I think that's the message beyond the hug. Be there. Be focused.
Put
that
the
matters.
Newspaper down. Yes. Turn off the television.
Yes, right.
Connect.
Stuff your papers back in your briefcase that you brought home. You know, this really matters.
Yeah. We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with author Deborah Blum about the importance of affection in early parenting. It's interesting, when you were talking about touch, I was thinking, in recent years, there's been a whole movement about baby massage.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the outcome of that has been at all? I would assume it's got to be positive.
You know, and some of that grew out of these early touch experiments that Harlow did. I mean, you can go back and you talk to people who do the biology of touch, and they say just these first experiments that say you get more healthy and more normal development with touch set off this whole sort of field of science. And then there's a whole range of people who have really pursued it. Saul Shanberg at Duke and Tiffany Field at the University of Miami are, you know, some of the leaders in this. And I mentioned Tiffany Field because what she did, this is the baby massage thing, and they really went in. Her initial work was with preemies. And actually,
preemie meaning premature babies.
Preemie meaning premature babies. So her initial work was with premature babies. And this followed something else that Harlow took on directly, which was out of this, affection doesn't matter, children don't really need their kids. Hospitals had imposed these super sterile kinds of rules for dealing with children who were sick. And it used to be if your child was sick, you were allowed to go in for an hour once a week. Because there was no recognition, isn't that incredible? There was no recognition by psychology that this essentially terrified children, took them out of their entire circle of security and left them really adrift from their support system. They just didn't let parents in. And actually, Harlow's work was part of a campaign by women's magazines in the 60s to say, let parents in. And then the sort of last barriers were with premature infants, and people were so worried about them getting sick that they would put them in these incubator-like boxes, and they would hardly ever let the parents in, much less touch them.
Oh my goodness.
What Field did was she went in with a sort of an army of students, and they just stroked these preemies, these premature infants. And they got phenomenal differences. They saw not only better growth, better, you know, a much more accelerated development for these touched infants. But you could go back to these guys years later, and they were smarter. they had higher IQs. Oh, and it stimulated this whole pattern of development so that we see that touch has this whole kind of chemistry that's very essential to who we are. Our basic biology loves touch. And there was another study that was done. This was actually done at the University of Wisconsin much later, which was sort of Harry Harlow's home base, in which they were just looking at, well, what's the chemistry of touch? What do we see developing in sort of circulating hormones and neurotransmitters when a mother holds a baby? And what they found is what you might call the chemistry of happiness, that you could get a rise in some of the beta endorphins and some of the other chemicals that we associate with contentment and happiness just from being held by your mother. So it's very profound in the way we develop and very profound in our biology.
It's funny. It's a shame that babies can't purr like kittens.
I like it when they sort of droop almost bonelessly over you. They're almost merging. It's just a really cool thing.
Harlow seems to have felt that love was a kind of work.
Yes.
In what way?
And I allude to that in the sort of pay attention thing. I think he was not at all warm and fuzzy about or cuddly about love. He wasn't a cuddly person. He was very driven and obsessive and sarcastic and, you know, not the kind of person that you'd say, oh, I just feel a need to hug this person. And to me, that's one of the more interesting things about him.
How ironic.
Very surprising.
That he's championed this kind of
interaction. And I love those paradoxes that you can have this very prickly, obsessed psychologist as the most unlikely champion in this cause. But I think that his sort of driven nature and the fact that he wasn't afraid to challenge psychology made a difference. And so his view of love is something like this. It matters. And once you say it matters, you have to focus and pay attention, as I said earlier, and you have to be there in the most inconvenient sense. You know, and this is not always a popular lesson. This takes time. This takes being there. This takes putting your own needs aside. That's work. Mm-hmm. This means that sometimes you're going to say, boy, I'm exhausted. I want to go to bed. But my child really wants me to read a story, and it matters to them. And I'm going to do that because it matters. And that's really what I mean by work. There's this period in which you have to work at putting your child first in the best way that you are able to, given whatever life you have, clearly. But it's work. It's the commitment of being there when you're there. And there were no cherubs and clouds surrounding mm-hmm. his work. It was the most earth-based, everyday. I think of it as almost everyday affection. And he would put it like that. He would say, no child grows up whole and healthy without a solid foundation of affection. And he would see the parents almost like builders in the brick after brick of building that foundation of affection.
It's interesting. A very wise psychologist once said, parenting is not about beginnings or endings. It's about middles. And you mm-hmm. don't get your report card in the day-to-day.
Oh,
you just have to keep mm-hmm. slogging it away.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, there's all kinds of reasons why in the sort of 21st century way we live, you know, we'd love for someone to come in and say, eh, you know, wave at your kid as you rush by the window and everything's going to turn out fine.
Well, and this business of quality time, if I give him 10 minutes at night, isn't that enough?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to slam dunk the quality time thing.
Is
yeah.
not so great now.
I don't believe in that at all.
One concept that you talk about in the book is the connection between love and stress. Would you like to explain that a little bit?
Yes, and I like that a lot because one of the messages in love and stress work is that it's okay to not get it right every time.
Mm-hmm. That everybody,
you know,
out there listening,
that's right.
Yes.
There's such relief in that work that it's okay that you know you have your off days, not extreme off days, but you have a day in which you're a little impatient. Or, you know, your child is asking for something and you just can't do it right then. You have to make them wait. Or I think I say in the book, you know, your baby's asleep, but boy, your next door neighbor came to admire him. And so you pick him up and wake him up anyway. Well, is that what the baby wanted? Nah. But there you are. And so it turns out when you look at this sort of science of love and stress, which has been mostly done in animals, that you need that. That the developing system actually needs for these sort of small irritations and stresses along the way to grow up healthy.
It's a young, sort of an immunity kind of thing?
You're building up an immunity. Your stress system, in a sense, you have like the stress system that needs to be exercised, is basically. It's like your immune system needs a workout with a few infections on the way, so that's a good analogy. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of like giving your stress system an early workout, and it's not too stressful. You know, it's just a little delay or a little mismatch between mother and child. And so the child is a little stressed, but not sort of thrown over into the trauma side. And the stress system sort of notches up, and then it notches itself back down, and it handles it, and it builds a sort of coping mechanism for mm-hmm. dealing with small stresses. So that as you grow up, and life, let's face it, is full of small stresses and things that don't go your way that you're always having to cope with, you've got this wonderful system in place for dealing with that. And for me as a parent, one of the best parts about that was saying to me, okay, so yesterday I didn't feel like little Miss Perfect Mother, but, and it's not that I am sitting there patting myself on the back and saying, oh good, I'm glad I wasn't, you know, at my best yesterday and totally annoyed my mm-hmm. child. That's really not the message.
Wasn't the goal.
It's not it. Yeah.
But the message is to say, you know what, this is okay. This is part of normal development. The growing system needs kind of a workout in real life. And this gives it a real life workout. And as it turns out, when you look at these animals as adults, the ones that are totally sheltered and protected aren't nearly as resilient and capable as the ones who got this sort of little everyday workout. So I like that as a message. I think it says, yes, pay attention, but, you know, don't make yourself crazy here.
We were given a similar message to that when my oldest son was in nursery school, and the director called my husband and me in for a meeting. And she said, you know, your son needs to see you make mistakes. Your son needs to see that you're not perfect. And we're looking at her, what? She said, when you drop something, when you forget something, when you do something wrong, when you burn something, you know, let him know that. Say, oh, look what happened. I burned the pancakes, or I spilled the milk. She said he thinks you never make mistakes, and so he has set very unrealistic goals for himself.
Well, that is interesting.
That was a major lesson to us as parents, that, hey, these kids need to know we get stressed, we get unhappy, we make mistakes, and it helps them navigate those same problems as they go through the years.
Well, that's interesting, because one of the things that I've sort of figured out as I go along, and the way that you tend to ad-lib parenting sometimes.
Unfortunately, we have no choice.
Right. Is that my parents would never fight in front of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they fought, and actually my parents don't fight that much, but when they do, it was always something they would do somewhere else. So that when I started out as a parent, that was one of my thoughts, that you should never fight in front of your kids. And I just don't have that kind of relationship, frankly. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I are much more equal partners in the parenting, different generation. And so we're always having these arguments. And after a while, you know, a little sort of, well,
discussions.
Discussions is exactly the word I'm looking for. So we would discuss something. And the kids, of course, are right there. And I realized that this was a good thing, that afterwards I could talk to my kids about it. I mean, we would talk about it and say, okay, we disagreed with about this, but look, we worked it out. You can work out anything if you talk it out. And that's been a sort of guiding principle for us. So.
I think that's very wise. I think kids do learn from what they see us do, not from what we lecture about anyway. So we have to give them all the tools, and that's how we're doing it.
Yeah, and you do learn from what your parents do. It's not just
Well, that's your basic model of relationships. And if your model of relationships is that they're absolutely perfect, then when you get married and your relationship isn't like that, you know.
But I want them to think that a healthy relationship is one that you have disagreements in.
Mm-hmm. And you have give and take, and you share ideas.
Even with friendships, kids need to know that.
That's exactly right.
And so just growing up in general, you need to know how to navigate stuff. At one point when we were talking about education, we were talking that it's really important developmentally for kids to have failures. You know, we all worry we don't want our kids to have failures. This is dreadful and terrible. But it's really important to have little failures along the way so that a big failure doesn't throw you.
Oh, that's
a good
point.
Coping mechanisms. Yeah.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with author Deborah Blum about the importance of affection in early parenting.
Little stresses, little failures, you know. And I want my children to be, I'm not interested in them being perfect, but I am interested in them being whole and happy and capable.
Comfortable with themselves.
Yes, and able to pick themselves up. I want them to be able, I can't wrap them up in, you know, cotton.
Wouldn't you like to?
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes, yeah. But I would like them to be able to bounce back up when things don't go their way.
Deborah, is there anything else that animal behavior can teach us as parents?
And one of the things that was actually useful for me out of these early monkey experiments was the question of when do you hold your child close and support and comfort and all of those things, and sort of related to what we were talking about earlier, when do you start pushing them out a little bit? And one of the things, and you sort of mentioned this earlier in Harry's work, is that Cloth Mother was not a good parent because she never pushed the child away. She always was there, totally available, never rejecting, never saying, go out and play with your friends. I'm here, I'm here. And it turns out that when Harry Harlow went and looked at this further, he found that this was a very negative thing, that real mothers do this for their kids. They teach them about social interactions, as we were discussing, and they teach them how to carry those social interactions out into the bigger world of other relationships. And so one of the most important jobs that a mother does with her child is prepare them and groom them and get them out there into the bigger social world. And he saw this almost as a chain, mother to child, to friends, to partners, to being a partner yourself, and you needed to do each step of this in a sort of well-grounded way to get you to the next. And I left father out of that chain. He acknowledged father in a sort of ahead of the 50s way, but this is the 1950s. This is very mother-focused research. And I thought about this a lot as a parent, you know. At what point do I need to absolutely be there, do the cotton wool thing, prop my kid up, and when are the points that I need to say, you know, you need to be out there. You need your feet under you. I want you to grow out and be your own person.
An interesting thing that someone on the show told us many years ago was that when mothers hold their babies, they hold them close to them, facing them. Mm-hmm. When fathers hold their babies, they hold them facing out.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm.
I think there's an interesting biology to it. And the other thing, as I've heard, is mothers much more often hold the baby over the heart, to the left, dads to the right. I mean, I think you cannot separate out. And one of the things that makes these kind of studies so important is we see this biological dance in what we need. And so when our parents pull us in and push us out, I think is part of that dance. It's really important. And Harry would have argued that we have to see ourselves in this social network of relationships, that this one relationship, parent and child, matters, but it matters in part so that we can go out and be part of community,
it's
part
the
of
beginning.
Other families. It's a beginning. That's exactly right.
Well, unfortunately, this is not the beginning. It's almost the end. But before we go, we need to ask you if there are any further resources that you would recommend for all the parents who are running for pencils right now.
There's a wonderful book called Becoming Attached by Robert Caron, which has both the history of attachment research and some really fabulous work looking at the connection between affection and intelligence.
Okay. Can you spell Karen's last name?
Yes, it's K-A-R-E-N.
Oh, just like a first name.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's out in paperback. And I found it to be one of my favorite books. You won't see it. It's not an obvious parenting book, but it is so smart, and it makes you understand so well the sort of thought processes behind these relationships. So I really highly recommend that book, aside from my own, of course.
Right, and we will say that again. That's Love at Goon Park, Harry Harlow, and The Science of Affection by Deborah Blum. And Deborah Blum, we are so glad you could be with us today. You've given us an awful lot to think about, and we are just delighted that you could take the time.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. 8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show 162. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.